Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A brief look at the legacy of the year 1885. It's the year that Mark Twain published The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. It's the year that the Statue of Liberty arrived in New York Harbor. Louis Pasteur successfully tested an anti-rabies vaccine that year. But the Brian Lehrer Show's Dark Horse nomination for most interesting legacy of the year 1885 is actually the New York Scaffold Law, because since 1885, the Scaffold Law has made building owners fully liable for injuries and deaths caused by falls and other injuries at construction sites. It's a law that is extremely controversial and has been for decades. Just Google Scaffold Law and you'll find dedicated websites from lobbying groups on both sides, not to mention vigorous debates on the pages of the Daily News, the New York Post, and more. Daily News columnist Bill Hammond recently waded into that controversy and argued that it's time to roll back the Scaffold Law, which he sees as an impediment to economic growth. Hey, Bill, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
So you want to just explain to everybody what the Scaffold Law is, because unless you're in the construction biz, you're like, what? And of course, these scaffolds should be safe. So what's your understanding of this?
Well, at the time it was passed, it was kind of a breakthrough that you would declare a specific industry and even a subsection of an industry that was involved in building at height. You know, skyscrapers were kind of a new thing back then. That you would specify that the employers were responsible for providing a safe work environment for their employees. That, at the time, it was very innovative, cutting edge. It was a breakthrough. This is before we had the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is, you know, regulates work sites. It was before we had workmen's compensation as we know it today. So it was a very progressive piece of legislation for its day. But it was so kind of sweeping, and as the courts have interpreted it over the decades, it's more than a century now, it has gotten to be to the point, as you say, where it's what's called absolute liability. If you can show, if you're injured in a fall at a work site, a construction site, and you can show that the employer was not following all the proper safety guidelines at that site, the employer becomes 100% liable for the injury. You do have to show a violation. However, the violation can be fairly technical or small related to what happened. What the employer can't do is try to show that you were partly to blame for your injury because you didn't follow instructions, or you were irresponsible in some way. If you had a few beers at lunch or whatever, those things would not reduce how much you were entitled to from the employer.
So I'm not quite getting it. All right. So you've established that this was a progressive law when it was new, and of course, employers should be responsible for maintaining their equipment, including scaffolds, safely for the employees, in this case mostly construction workers. So where does the law become counterproductive?
Well, it's different than in every other area of personal injury law, including in work sites. You have what's called comparative negligence, meaning both sides go into court. They present the evidence of what they think happened, and the judge and the jury look at it and they say, okay, in this particular accident, the employee was 50% responsible and the employer was 50% responsible. So we calculate the damages and we cut them in half, and that's how much the employee collects. They might also decide the employee was 1% responsible, and so the employer pays pretty much the whole thing.
I see. So the Scaffold Law critics like yourself say even if the circumstances of a particular accident show that a worker was 99% responsible for the accident, if proper safety measures weren't in place on the site contributing 1%, they can win in court for 100% of the financial responsibility.
Right. Right.
So does this have any practical negative effect on the city? Does it mean that less that should get built does get built?
Oh, well, I mean, it certainly has a huge effect on the cost of construction. We had just in the last few months, we had two clear examples of that. The School Construction Authority, they solicited bids for liability insurance, and they actually got no offers. Now, this is a multi-billion dollar operation. It has a solid safety record. It's not a fly-by-night contractor, right? This is the city of New York, essentially, and it's building schools. And no insurance company wanted to take on the risk. They ended up cutting a deal where they're basically self-insuring, and their costs for the year went from $100 million last year to $240 million this year. That's more than double in a single year. So
it increases the cost of construction, which increases the cost of housing.
$140 million. That's $140 million out of the School Construction Authority's budget that could be used to build, for example, pre-kindergarten classroom space.
So listeners, we're going to
the MTA. They,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. So it's not just
MTA,
housing; it's also school space.
The MTA came out with their own analysis that said, we used to pay 3% of our construction costs went to insurance. Now, in more recent construction projects, it's been closer to 7%. Those are huge numbers. Those are hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's just those two agencies. When you look at it,
why would it be going up so much if the law hasn't changed in who it calls liable in 130 years?
Because the court decisions around it have continued to expand the purview of the law.
The size of the awards.
One recent example is it used to be you had to actually fall off a scaffold or injure yourself in a fall. Now, in recent years, it's been expanded to be any gravity-related accident. So, for example, if a pipe is leaning against a wall and it tips over and it hits somebody on the foot, that becomes covered not by regular liability law, but by the scaffold law with its very, strict requirements.
Listeners.
And that's happened, that continues to happen. It seems to be every time one of those decisions comes down, the insurance companies kind of freak out and they reestimate their risk and they ask for more money from employers.
Bill Hammond, Daily News columnist with us, arguing for the repeal of the current scaffold law in New York State and its replacement with something more reasonable that he said would be more fair to the employers
I should correct you on something there, Brian.
I'm sorry.
No one is proposing repeal. What they're saying is that the law, they should add a comparative negligence standard to the law.
Gotcha. So construction workers, construction site owners are weighing in. 212-433 WNYC. Let's talk to Brian in Oceanside. You're on the air, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing, man?
All right.
Let me just tell you one thing. I'm a former iron worker union, and I was forced into retirement by doing what my foreman told me to do. I had no control over my worksite conditions. I had no control over the safety equipment I was issued or not issued, for that matter. And all I know is he brought me to the perimeter of the building. He told me to do something. I called for the right tool for the job. He called right over me, told me to do it his way. I did it his way, and about 90 seconds later, I fell 65 feet.
Oh, my God.
So if this scaffold law wasn't in effect, are you telling me it's my fault because I was told to do something and I did it? I should have to pay for that?
It sounds like Bill's argument is if you were told to do it, then your employer, your supervisor, therefore your employer, would be 100% responsible, and the change in the law for this comparative liability wouldn't affect your case. Does that make sense to you?
Not really, because that's like apples and oranges. Again, that pipe leaning against the wall, who's to say my crew put it there? That pipe leaning against the wall could have been put there by another contractor. And now it hits me or one of my guys, and we're supposed to take on the medical bills and the responsibility of that injury.
Bill, you want to talk to Brian?
Well, I guess as what you said before, I think would be my answer as well. No one is suggesting that construction work isn't dangerous, and no one is suggesting that people who are injured shouldn't have compensation. The question is whether these matters should be decided according to standards that apply to every other work site, and whether it sounds like in your case there was strong evidence that the accident wasn't your fault, and if that was the case, the outcome would be the same under the proposed reform.
Brian.
Okay. Back to this pipe leaning against the wall. If my group of ironworkers don't have anything to do with pipes, we unfortunately have to work around this pipe. This pipe doesn't get moved. It eventually falls on me or one of my ironworkers.
Yeah, so there's lots of different crews on one site. And, Bill, I guess it's an example of the vagaries. Once the law starts to look for comparative negligence or liability, then you have employees saying, oh, this guy left a pipe sitting against the wall, and if it wasn't there in the first place, then when he got this instruction to do that, then he wouldn't have had the accident. And he said, she said, against these employers and the companies that are purportedly insured. So it would open up that kind of can of worms, right?
I suppose. I mean, there are any number of complicated situations you could imagine. I guess I would just point out that there are complicated situations in medical malpractice as well. And yet in medical malpractice, you have to actually show that the person you're holding liable was responsible for the injury in some way.
Lou in Stony Point, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lou.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to try and put the scaffold law in context and how onerous the strict liability aspect of it is.
And tell us your relationship to this.
I'm a contractor and 35 years in the construction field.
Okay.
Paid a lot of liability insurance premiums. If you had an employee come in and use a piece of equipment and you told them to stop using that piece of equipment because it was faulty, and they came in the next day and they did the same thing and you suspended them for it, and then they came in after a week suspension and used that same piece of equipment after having been suspended, and that piece of equipment, say it was a faulty ladder, caused their fall, if they fell from a height of more than 6 feet, none of those extenuating circumstances would come into the case. In fact, it goes beyond that. If an employee is drunk and you sent him home for being drunk, and he doesn't go home and he goes and helps his buddy and climbs up on a ladder and falls, that extenuating circumstances also does not come in. It's absolute strict liability if it meets certain thresholds, like falling from a height of more than 6 feet. I was unaware of what your guest said about the pipe falling. So, you know, the he said, she said, and trying to make some Solomon-type decision on, you know, who's at fault, we're not even anywhere near close to that. The scenarios under which employers are strictly liable, absolutely strictly liable, are endless.
Lou, thank you very much. So as our time begins to run out here, Bill Hammond, Daily News columnist, we've gotten, you know, emotional pleas from both sides, from a worker who had an accident and is afraid that he could be held partly liable for this accident in the workplace that wasn't his fault. And from Lou here, the contractor, who says, look what this status quo is doing to us. Your column is on his side. Is anything going on with this? Are you just sort of picking this fight or picking this public discussion because you think it's important? Or is there something in front of the legislature in Albany or something like that that makes it salient right now?
There's a new study that came out that I think we should talk about. It came out a few months ago. It was paid for by proponents of reform, but it was done by professors at the University of Albany and at Cornell. And one of their findings was they looked at the state of Illinois, where they used to have a similar law. It was reformed in 1995, and they looked at the safety record in Illinois, which has a big city of Chicago with a lot of high-rise construction. And they found that the accident rates actually went down and the death rates actually went down pretty significantly after the law was reformed. And not only did they go down, because they were going down nationwide, they went down faster than they went down in New York. Now, the study actually makes the case that the law is creating excess deaths and injuries based on their statistical analysis.
But critics of the Illinois study, I'll just point out, I'm really out of time, but critics of the Illinois study say it was funded by the construction industry, and moreover, New York has continued to outpace Illinois in terms of construction industry growth over the last 10 years, even with our law. So give me a last 15-second soundbite, and then I got to go.
Well, that had to do more with the economics of real estate in New York City versus Chicago. I mean, we have a very highly profitable real estate industry in New York City that can for now at least, can absorb the extra cost. What the question is, the public sector is really suffering from this, and the smaller companies are suffering from it, and the companies outside New York are suffering from it.
Daily News columnist Bill Hammond, thank you very much for raising the issue. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, gluten-free living, according to actress Jennifer Esposito, who lost her role on the series Blue Bloods because of celiac. Stay with us.